your FM dial. RadioFreeNashville.org on the internet, and Carl Jackson is my guest tonight, and Carl has just had an amazing career. Check him out on carljackson.net, and we were just talking about his Grammys and working with Jim and Jesse and Glenn Campbell, and I'm fixing to ask you to play some stuff live, I think.
Sure.
What sounds good?
You want to hear something?
Play whatever you want to play.
All right. Well, let me play you a little. This is a song that's not it's not been a hit at all or anything. It's just a little kind of autobiographical tune that's kind of fun to do. Just a child of the 50s from a little one-horse town, North Central Mississippi, that's my old stomping ground. Life was pure and simple then, just home and family. There's been a world of change around there since 1953. Well, I know some would stand and argue a lot of progress has been made, but those were the days. Daddy used to pay a dollar for every home run that I belt. Each boy I fanned in Little League got me one more Roosevelt. One night in 64, made $2.60. When 16 went down swinging and one cleared the left field fence. Now I've been paid a lot more money, still the best I ever made. Those were the days. Those were the days, turned to weeks, turned to months, turned to years. Now there are only tears upon my face, 'cause those were the days. Growing up, my friends and I had fun and never thought of taking drugs. We kinda thought the Beatles' hair was cool, but we liked flat scrubs. I wandered back in time, closed my eyes and reminisce. The mix still with the Yankees and Archie's at Ole Miss. Well, they say Peyton is the greatest, but they never saw his daddy play. Those were the days. Friday nights were mugging cone after movies at the Strand. I used to go there with Gay Davis and pray for nerve to hold her hand. We'd watch that silver screen and fly off to another world, where John Wayne got the bad guys and Elvis got the girls. Now I've even met some movie stars, but I'd still have to say those were the days. Those were the days, turned to weeks, turned to months, turned to years. Now they're only tears upon my face, 'cause those were the days. Last night I had a dream, the year's 2025. I was walking through an empty town I did not recognize. I found a coin, so I knelt down to wipe away the dust. And just below, the eagle read, "In God we used to trust." Oh, they all say in Washington our country is still strong. I guess that depends what is, 'cause I'm afraid we're gone. We know we used to press for morals, and we gained the world's respect. Now we're pressing one for English to be politically gave America away. Those were the days, those were the days, turned to weeks, turned to months, turned to years. Now they're only tears upon my face. Those were the days, those were the seconds, turned to minutes, turned to hours, turned to days, turned to weeks, turned to months, turned to years. Now they're only tears upon your face. Those were the days. Those were the days, the good old days.
All right. Nice.
Thank you.
That's out. You have a record.
You
of
know, it's not out yet. I do it live a lot, and people ask me to do it all the time. But I plan on putting it out at
eventually.
Some point.
How long ago did you write that?
It's actually been several years ago.
Several years ago.
Yeah, I do a show down in my hometown every year at Christmas, and I just got the idea that I needed to write something to do especially for them, and so I wrote it several years ago. For that, and I apologize for the appearance of Kermit there in the middle of it with me, but you know, he will show up every now and then. But anyway, it's a fun song to do. When I do it out, people ask me to
do it a lot, so. I remember you when you played that last time I heard you play.
Thank you.
Out. You got another one in that key?
Sure, yeah. I can do something else for you if you want. I'll do this song here.
He's in open G, folks. Yeah. I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. This song here was, this is the first. This is the first top 10 country song I ever had, and I had gone out to L.A. like I say in 1972, and got the job with Glenn Campbell. And my mom, she was so sweet. She used to give me a little hard time because I wasn't very good about writing letters back home. So I decided one day I'd try to make it up to her and my dad and my sister by writing a song. So I wrote this song. And then, strangely enough, in 1984, Glenn heard it and decided he would cut it. And it was released, and it was the first top 10 country song I ever had. So,
what's the title?
It's called Letter to Home.
Sweet.
You might think there's some big reason I took the time to write cards and letters. There've been too few of those, but I just stopped to realize how long that I've been gone. And there's a few small things I need to know. Dear Daddy, do the whippoorwills still echo through the night? There's a sound of silence squeeze the morning light. His granddad caught the big one in the pond just down the road. I miss you so. But time keeps right on slipping by me, like the miles out on the road. But I don't guess I'll change my way of life. There's no harm in holding memories. Please tell me if you can. I need to bring those old times into sight. Dear Mama, can you still find the dipper in the stars? Do the roads still go for hours without cars? Does the frost still shine cold mornings on the grass outside the door? Just like before, tell me more. Is this still planning marriage sometime soon? Can you still reach out and almost touch the moon? Do the old songs still ring out through the hills for days and days? Love always.
Sweet, sweet. How many songs that you've written have made the charts?
Well, gosh, that's a good question. Actually made the charts. I don't know. I could tell you the biggest hits. I could. Letter to Home was the first. I think it either went to 9 or 10. It was. I know it was the first top 10 that I had. I wrote a song with Pam Tillis called "Put Yourself in My Place," that I believe only made it to number 2. But that's close enough. And wrote a song with Jerry Sally called "Breaking New Ground" that was a big hit for a group called Wild Rose. I don't know if you remember
that.
An all-girl band. It was just and they cut such a great record on that. That was a top 10 record. Then in 1993, I had the Radio and Records number one country song of the year with Vince Gill on a song called "No Future in the Past" that we wrote together. And he just crushed it. Great friend and great artist. Yeah, in every sense of the word, a true artist and a good person. And then had a lot of a lot of other great cuts. Garth Brooks cut two of my songs. He cut a song called "Against the Grain" that I wrote with Larry Cordell.
I love that song.
And Bruce Boughton.
That song. I asked Larry to play that out, and he doesn't play that song out. He says, "I can't do it." I don't know what that means.
It's a tough song to play. It's a tough song to play. That he also recorded a song called "Fit for a King" that I wrote with Jim Rushing. So been blessed to have two Garth Brooks cuts.
That's sweet.
Trisha Yearwood did a song called "Lonesome Dove." That's one of my favorite cuts that I've ever had, because not only because just. Oh, my gosh, the way she sung it, she's just amazing.
Was she with Garth at the time?
No, this was before. This was on her first album.
Yeah.
And Vince sang harmony on it.
Oh, my goodness, that's great.
I remember he stopped me on the street one day, and he said, "Man, that's one of my favorite things I've ever sung harmony on." Thanks, buddy, because he killed it. Diamond Rio has done songs. Steve Warner has done songs. And I've been very blessed. Have a lot of
I think your bio says your songs have sold like somewhere in the 40 million.
Somewhere in there, 40, 50 million. It's been, knock on wood,
keep on going.
Been blessed to be able, not only have a lot of, or several hit songs, but to be on some good albums and good records and stuff by great artists. And that's mighty nice.
Yeah.
Very, very proud of that and very thankful.
You want to pick a track off your CD and talk about it, set it up, and
why don't we do that? I tell you,
got disc one in there right now, but I could easily put the other one.
Well, that's okay. Let's. Gosh, there's so many things on here I'd love to talk about, and maybe we can several of them. Whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I'd love for folks to hear Bradley Walker sing "A Cowboy in His Soul."
Let's do it.
I absolutely love this song, and like I say, we kind of added it to the Twain thing last minute to take on the about him going out west. In fact, we can play the setup to it if you want to before or whatever.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Play track 7 and track 8. This talks about when he moves out west with his brother for a while, and then this song, Bradley Walker. I don't know how many of you have heard him, but he's just an absolutely fascinating singer. He's one of the best.
Nashville cat?
He is. Bradley lives in Athens, Alabama, actually. And he's an inspiration. believe me, he has muscular dystrophy.
Mm.
And but you would never know it by him. Mm. He just is absolute. I can't say enough about him. Just one of the finest people that I know. And wait till you hear him say.
Did you discover him?
Well, I don't want to say that I totally discovered him, but
you brought him.
I'm among those that have discovered him, I guess. I mean, the minute you hear Bradley, you discover him. I'm telling you, he's a great singer, and I just want to nothing but great things for him.
Here we go.
Sam did become a steamboat pilot, got his license in 1859. His run took him back and forth between New Orleans and St. Louis.
Every night we'd pass towns. Some of them are way up on the black hillsides, nothing but just a shiny bed of lights. Not a house could you see. The fifth night we passed St. Louis, and it was like the whole world lit up. In St. Petersburg, they used to say there was 20 or 30,000 people in St. Louis, but I never believed it till I see that wonderful spread of lights at 2 o'clock that still night.
But when the Civil War broke out in 1861, his permanent ambition came to an end. He joined his brother on a stagecoach journey to the Nevada Territory, where they would live for the next several years in the company of gold miners, silver miners, coyotes, cowboys, saloon keepers, antelope, politicians, prairie dogs, and various colorful characters. And this is where Sam Clemens would officially become Mark Twain, writing for the Virginia City Territorial Enterprise. Sam got a glimpse of a Pony Express rider. He shared a cup of coffee with the legendary gunslinger Slade. He bought himself a genuine Mexican plug and speculated on the Comstock lode. Although he distinguished himself as a storyteller and immortalized many a Western rapscallion, he never did master that genuine Mexican plug.
In the afternoon, I brought the creature into the plaza, and certain citizens held him by the head and others by the tail while I mounted him. As soon as they let go, he placed all his feet in a bunch together, lowered his back, and then suddenly arched it upward and shot me straight into the air, a matter of 3 to 4 feet. I heard a stranger say, "Oh, don't he buck, though." While I was up, somebody struck the horse a sounding thwack with a leathern strap. And when I arrived again, the genuine Mexican plug was not there. A California youth chased him up and caught him and asked if he might have a ride. He mounted the genuine, got lifted into the air once, but set his spurs home as he descended and the horse darted away like a telegram. He soared over three fences like a bird and disappeared down the road toward Washoe Valley.
A good hand breaking horses, pure poison with the rope. He lives for strong black coffee and the rolling of his smokes. He throws a leg up on old Ranger, sticks around until he's high. Saddled there in his easy chair, through his memory he still rides. While shaking out a good lip, he fixes ashes on the floor. He's a branding for Sam Williams, who he loved working for. In the air he draws a picture with a cigarette in his hand, as his fingers make the last stroke. In the smoke I see the brand. Line of work. There's no silver on his saddle and no fringe upon his shirt. Well, I'd give the world to be like him for 90 years ago. 'Cause when the master's hands made this man, he shuffles out to the bar and hollers me out there. He points up to his saddle in that dusty hideaway. He says he'd like to give it to me, but he might need it someday. Silver on his saddle and no fringe upon his shirt. Well, I'd give the world to be like him, born 90 years ago. 'Cause when the master's hands made this man, he put a cowboy in his soul.
Lovely. That's just awesome.
Bradley Walker. Woo. What a singer.
So, refresh our memory. You recorded this whole project here.
In Nashville.
Locally.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I sure did. Some of the overdubs I did at the house, but most of the stuff I recorded here. That's in Nashville, too, but out at Berry Hill at Station West.
Has that been your studio of choice for quite some
absolutely,
time?
Absolutely, absolutely. I love working there. I love Luke Wooten's like a brother to me, and John Caldwell and Kyle and Don and all of them there. They're just wonderful people, and I enjoy working there very much.
I would say as being a certified guitar player. Is that what he used to say?
That is what he did. That is what he said.
How does somebody, you know? I'm anticipating what your answer is going to be, but how does somebody get really good on the guitar, good enough to play, good enough to be, asked to play on sessions and other people's music and stuff like that?
Well, I guess the short answer is practice.
All right. I knew you were going to say that. So how do you practice? I mean, what do you practice?
Well, obviously, after you get to a certain point and you get so busy and stuff, you don't enough. I get busy doing one thing and another and writing this or producing that, doing that. And I find myself, it's much easier for me to play in the studio now than it is to play, you know, because I've got a reverse button.
But I'm
you know what I mean?
I'm talking about somebody that wants to be.
Oh.
Like, you know, they're just starting out or maybe they've...
I would go to...
What do you practice? Scales? Do you practice playing with records? Do you practice...
I did a little bit of all of it. You know, I mean, I learned some scales definitely and worked with those things. But I listened to my heroes, you know. I listened to records and played along with them and slowed them down and tried to figure out what Chet was doing and what Jerry Reed was doing and what Glenn Campbell was doing.
Then you would try to play with them.
You know, and try to play with them, absolutely. And if, you know, and then and from that you develop your own things and you start, you know, you write your own things and you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that makes some pretty good soup sometimes. You know, you know. So that's kind of what you do. I don't think there's any absolute. This is the way you do it. All of those things come into it.
Do you have to be like blessed with, you know, quite a bit of natural talent in order to be a professional guitar player?
I think to be one of the kind you're talking about. Yeah.
You got to have it kind of like it's kind of wired in.
I mean, there are certainly things with that or with songwriting or with anything else that you can learn mm-hmm. and be taught. But there's just something that has to, I believe, has to be in there.
Yeah.
It has to be, that comes
that
from,
you just grow and
it comes
develop
from up
it.
Above. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there. And you're developing.
Yeah.
I often see that with, I wonder sometimes, and I'll probably, I don't mean to get off on the wrong track at all or anything, but I wonder sometimes, I'll I'll see kids with, you know, with an obvious talent and wonder sometimes why it's not okay to push them to do that. If it's okay to push them to do, to diagram a sentence.
Yeah.
Or to push them to do a certain math problem or whatever.
Yeah,
they need to learn those things. They need to absolutely need to be able to do those things. But we seem to sometimes have no problem having them do that kind of homework, but we got a problem making them practice.
Mm-hmm.
Something that can, you know, make them a really good living, take care of them for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
You know, take care of, you know, their children. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. So it goes back to practice, but I think sometimes with kids, they don't recognize it themselves. You know, I'm very thankful to my dad for the ways he not only let me do what I wanted to do musically, but he also very gently pushed me.
He facilitated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did it. He knew how to do it just in the right way.
Yeah. Didn't turn you off.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. But he made me want to do it. And made me want to do it right. And made me realize that if I was going to do it, I had to do it right. I wasn't going to halfway do it.
Yes.
But I didn't care about it, you know. So, and there was nothing wrong with that at all. I'm very grateful to him, you know.
Do you play guitar more these days than you do the banjo?
These days I play more guitar, you know, play it more often because it's the, you know, pretty much the instrument of choice for me to write on. You know, I'm not a keyboard player, so I write with guitar.
Mm.
And most of the, you know, although, you know, banjo's on a lot of records now, or at least what they want to call a banjo.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a fake banjo or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's banjo body guitar neck.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's just, it kind of lends itself to more of what I'm doing these days or what I need to do these days. So, but I still love to play banjo.
Now, you have your own publishing company?
I do.
And you have a certain number of writers working for you?
I actually don't have any other writers working for me now. I have had over the years, but right now I don't have anybody else signed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love writing songs, but I don't know. I like to take my time and I like to write with people that want to write great songs and they're not worried about whether it gets on radio or not. Of course we want it on radio. We want people to hear it. We want people to enjoy it, but not at the sake of a great song.
Right.
You know, if you keep the integrity in it and all that stuff, the rest of it will take care of itself in time. It'll work out.
Do you think as many classics and standards are being written today as they were in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s?
I hope not. I'd hate to think that that kids down the road have got to listen to some of this in an elevator. But
why not? Why? What happened?
I don't
you
know.
Gotta,
you know, I mean, I think it's
got a perspective.
It's like a, I don't know. I just think the whole,
opens up a big thing.
We could get into a big discussion there, and it's okay. I'm perfectly willing to do that. But I just feel like, you know, it's kind of a part of the, gosh, and I don't want to step on any toes, but it's kind of like the dumbing down of America, you know?
There's books about that.
The
coming
truth
right
is,
out and saying it. Yeah.
You know, I always say that, you know, it's not, you're not slamming anybody if you're telling the truth.
Mm. Good, you know, good point.
That's the way I feel, you know, and it really is. I mean, I think people will follow good stuff just like they'll follow bad stuff.
Yeah.
If we would just, the ones that know the difference, if they just push good stuff.
You think music is as important in the culture now as it was in earlier decades?
Oh, it probably is in different, and maybe in different ways, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me to, I can't sit here and honestly say that I feel like I could turn on the radio and be inspired on the way home.
Yeah.
You know, I like those things that just touch you, you know, deep inside, you know, they make you feel that emotion. I always say the heartstrings are connected directly to the wallet.
Mm.
You know, that seems to play out in the great songs of all time, the great movies of all time, everything. Those are the ones that, you know, the comedies are great and they're fun and the ones that make you dance, they're great and they're fun, all that. But the ones that really, really last forever, are the ones that touch those other emotions.
Yeah.
You know, I think somebody, I haven't heard him say it directly, but I believe Vince Gill said one time something about he loved the sad songs the most. And I'm the same way. You know, I love those kind of songs because they don't necessarily make me feel sad at all.
No.
They refer me back to something that was absolutely wonderful or whatever. They make me think of someone or some specific event in my life that was wonderful. They don't make me sad to hear a sad song.
Yeah. Not at all. I'm the same way.
I'd rather hear them any day of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Any day of the week.
You know, a lot of the people that have been my guests, we talk about how you get a cut. And I think the consensus is pretty much it's who you know. In that, you know, if you don't have some connections, even if you got a really great song, I mean, there are exceptions, but it really helps to kind of know the artist or somebody close to the artist.
It definitely helps. There's no doubt about it, and I think it's become more that way. I would like to think there was a time, and I know, my dear friend Glenn Sutton, who's passed away now, there was a time when, I feel like that the town was more song oriented, you know, and you could, if you wrote a great song, you had a really good shot of getting it cut. These days, I honestly don't necessarily feel that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you write a great song or what you feel is a great song and what people tell you is a great song, what people respond to is a great song. They ask you to play it over and over, the ones that get to hear it. But man, it has basically no shot of making a record.
Yeah.
And why is that? You know, mm-hmm. Well, you know, I guess it just is, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't like it, but.
Do you ever deliberately sit down and try to write a song that is gonna, you know, be what I guess some people refer to as a money song? I'm writing this song for money.
Not unless I'm making fun. No.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I've written a couple of things where I'm just kind of joking and making a joke out of the way the My Own Little Murder on Music Row or whatever, that type of thing, you know.
Right.
Which that's a perfect example. There's a song, a CMA Song of the Year.
Yeah.
But it only made it to like, 15 or 20 on the charts.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You think that had any effect on the music industry here?
It didn't have enough. But I loved it, you know, and I love Cord and Larry Schell for writing it. I wish I'd have been there that day to help them, you know. I think it's funny, but it's got so much truth in it, you know?
Yeah.
It's really a great song. It's a great song. It's a great song. And I don't know. I'm sure there were probably a few people that offended with quotation marks around it. You know, who knows what people get offended at stuff these days. What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You know, it's like, well, it's tough to offend me. You know, it's like I can find humor or goodness or, you know, in a lot of different things. And, I think we probably all need to lighten up a little bit and not worry so much about things like that. You know, try to do the best music we can, write the best songs we can, do the best we can at everything we do, and the rest of it take care of itself. And no, I don't go for just the money. I believe that money follows.
Yeah.
I believe success and money will take care of itself if you won't compromise. And you got to have patience for that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have patience for that. And that is one of the problems. I think that we've become a culture that's looking for the quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking right at the end of our nose rather than looking down the road. You know, we get ourselves in a lot of trouble with that. Our country's in a lot of trouble for that. We're not. We're in a mess, leaving things for people down the road, and that bleeds over, I believe, into everything, mm-hmm. into music and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Short and no, you got to have vision. Look out, look down the road a ways. You know?
There used to be, I think Larry was on my show, and I think he said he thought that at one time there was like maybe 2,000 folks that had rider deals in town. Now there's about 200.
That sounds about right.
What do you think happened?
Well, you know, again, I wouldn't want to offend anybody, but maybe there's only 200 that's willing to write what's on the radio. I don't know. I don't know. I don't begrudge any of it. I mean, I'm happy for everybody that has success. I want them to.
Yeah.
But I won't, you know, I do find it hard to believe that some of the things that are hits now are going to be hits.
Like, will we be talking about them a year from now, or five years from now,
whatever. You know, there was a time, I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I think, wasn't big band music the biggest thing in America at one time?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we better be thinking. Because sooner or later, people would, you know, you can sometimes sell aluminum siding to people with brick homes, but not forever.
Mm-hmm.
They've eventually figured out there is a difference. I believe. And if it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with any, I love great music, period. I don't have a problem with any, whatever it is, as long as it's great and it's good. But when it starts not being really good and you start calling it something that it's not.
It's a lie then.
It becomes a lie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that people won't pick it up and, like, enjoy it or whatever, you know, it doesn't mean, but that can be when you sell somebody something and they believe it's one thing and then they find out later on that it's not.
Like a bait and switch.
Good luck. You've lost them forever then. It's the slow growth thing, yeah. the slow build, the Alison Krauss way.
Mm.
You know, she's always known what she wanted to be and how, you know, she would never sell out. She will never, ever sell out.
Yeah.
You know, everything's got integrity. There's a reason she's got more Grammys than anybody. I believe.
Very good point. What do you think the future of the CD is?
Future of the CD, that's, I don't know. I said years ago that they'd have 24 tracks in a matchbook, and they've pretty well got that now. So, you know, CDs will probably go. There'll be, you know, it'll probably be a little chip or something that, hopefully we don't implant inside our finger or something or inside our ear, but you know, there'll be something.
I heard some of the newer cars don't have CD players in them.
I haven't heard that.
And I heard Sony quit making CDs.
I didn't hear that.
One of my guests said that he would bet on it that vinyl's going to come back. Now, I mentioned that to people.
I will doubt that, too.
That would be a pretty amazing.
Yeah, I don't think vinyl's coming back. I could be wrong.
You listen to vinyl?
So. I don't.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I understand that, and I'm not saying that it doesn't sound good. But I just soon have it without the pops myself.
Yeah.
I've always, you know, I'll hear people say a lot of times, man, you know, it just sounded so much better when it was on analog tape. And I'm like, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a track and we'll put some white noise on it and we'll make it sound like analog tape for you. How's that? You know, it's like the reason it doesn't sound that way is because it doesn't have the noise on it. If you like that warmth, okay. You know, you can call that warmth and fall in love with it. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm a fan of hearing an instrument or hearing a voice just, yeah, you know, how they're coming out.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? And so I've always kind of been that way with I love the new technology and the speed of that it allows you to do editing and things like that. And it's just, I love the new technology.
Yeah,
I think it's great. I think it can be abused as we've talked about.
Right.
And it is often.
Yeah.
But, I don't like that. I don't at all. But there are parts about it that are great.
Now, speaking of songwriting, I asked you when we were off the air a minute ago, when we were listening to the record, to play a song.
Yeah.
You want to set that up for us?
Sure, I can do that. This song here was that you asked for. I used to, back in the late 80s, I wrote for Ricky Skaggs' company, and he was producing an album on Dolly Parton. And he asked me to write a song for it, and so came up with this little idea and got with my good buddy Jim Rushing, and we wrote this tune. And we thought it would make a good thing for Dolly, and still believe it would have, but Ricky, he kind of liked it himself, and he decided to cut it on with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band on the Will the Circle Be Unbroken 2 album. And it's called Little Mountain Church House. And Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver also cut it, and it was the first IBMA, International Bluegrass Music Association, Song of the Year.
And it's one of the standout cuts on that record, in my opinion. If not the best one, it's awesome. I
appreciate that.
Little Mountain Church House, Carl Jackson.
There's a little mountain church in my thoughts of yesterday, where friends and family gathered for the Lord. There an old-fashioned preacher taught the straight and narrow way for what few coins a congregation could afford. Dressed in all our Sunday best, we sat on pews of solid oak, and I remember our voices filled the air. Our mama sounded like an angel on those high soprano notes of when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. Looking back now, that little mountain church house has become my life's cornerstone. It was there in that little mountain church house I first heard the word to base my life upon. At the all-day Sunday singings and dinner on the ground, many were the souls who were revived. While the brothers and sisters who'd gone on to glory land slept in peace in the maple grove nearby. Looking back now, that little mountain church house has become my life's cornerstone. It was there in that little mountain church house I first heard the word to base my life upon. Looking back now, that little mountain church house has become my life's cornerstone. It was there in that little mountain church house I first heard the word to base my life upon.
Awesome. That is such a killer song. I just love that.
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't think I should have had this burrito before this.
Ricky gets way up there on that song. You got to listen to that. You got to go get that record and listen to that. That is just
next time,
awesome.
I'm not going to let you feed me before we do this.
What else you want to? You want to pitch or promote or
man, I love
hit
you to,
anything?
I would love you to play another thing off this record.
Let's do
if
it.
You would.
Now, I want you to be thinking about what we're going to end with, too. We got like about 15 minutes left, so be thinking about what track,
okay,
what couple of tracks we should end with,
okay,
too.
All right. I'll do that. I'd like you. Can you play one off the other disc?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll hand this to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have you play, I want you to play a tune here sung by Val Story.
Working with you at the station.
Yeah, she is, and I wanted to mention that on the middle Mondays of the month, we're now playing the station inn here in town. Myself, Val Story, Larry Cordle, Doug Jernigan playing steel, Aubrey Haney playing fiddle, Larry Anna Manuk on drums, Catherine Marks playing keyboards, and we're just Mike Bubb playing bass sometimes, Brad Albin playing bass. We're having a great time doing
a lot of sound.
A lot of sound, a lot of country music coming to you.
Sweet.
And I want folks to hear Val Story sing here. She's an amazing singer, and just one of the best I know. And on the Twain record, she sings a song here called Love Is On Our Side, which it kind of, we use the song to tell the story about when Twain loses his daughter.
Yeah.
And it's just a great performance, and I'd like for folks to hear her sing it.
What track is that?
That track is, that would be, Love Is On Our Side, is track 6 on disc 2.
So cue to 6?
Yeah, unless you want to hear the talking part ahead
Let's
of time.
Hear the talking part.
The talking part, track 5 then.
Track 5.
Yeah.
Logically. Here we go. Now here we go.
Sales of the new book would allow the family to pay off every cent of their debt. Sam, Livy, and Clara had kept in touch with Susie and Jean during those 13 months of traveling through letters and cablegrams, and now a reunion was planned for the family to live together once again, this time in England, where it wouldn't cost so much and where Sam could write in peace.
Clara, her mother, and I arrived in England from around the world on the 31st of July and took a house in Guildford. A week later, when Susie, Katie, and Jean should have been arriving from America, we got a letter instead. It explained that Susie was slightly ill, nothing of consequence. But we were disquieted and began to cable for later news. This was Friday. All day, no answer, and a ship to leave Southampton next day at noon. Clara and her mother began packing to be ready in case the news should be bad. Finally came a cablegram saying, "Wait for cablegram in the morning." This was not satisfactory, not reassuring. I cabled again, asking that the answer be sent to Southampton, for the day was now closing. I waited in the post office that night till the doors were closed, toward midnight, in the hope that good news might still come. But there was no message. We sat silent at home till 1 in the morning, waiting. Waiting for we knew not what. Then we took the earliest morning train, and when we reached Southampton, the message was there. It said the recovery would be long but certain. This was a great relief to me, but not to my wife. She was frightened. She and Clara went aboard the steamer at once and sailed for America to nurse Susie. I remained behind to search for another and larger house in Guildford. That was the 15th of August, 1896. 3 days later, when my wife and Clara were about halfway across the ocean, I was standing in our dining room, thinking of nothing in particular, when a cablegram was put into my hand. It said Susie was peacefully released today. It is one of the mysteries of our nature that a man all unprepared can receive a thunderstroke like that and live. The calamity that comes is never the one we had prepared ourselves for.
Friend, show me a broken man standing up again. Show me a smile in ancient eyes, and I'll say love is on our side. See the little baby in her mother's arms. Daddy was a shelter, keeping her from harm. When the storm gets closer, we realize that love is on our side. You see, listen to the dreamer sound like you and me. See them working hands joined to arise, and see love is on our side. changes for the world to end. Who is gonna save us? Who is gonna win? And beyond the headlights, the answer lies. Love is on our side.
All right.
Told you she could sing.
Oh, my goodness. And she's with you every middle Monday.
All the middle Mondays of the month.
All the middle Mondays of the month.
Yeah.
And
at the Station Inn.
At the Station Inn.
Please come see us.
We're coming into the final moments of the show, and Carl Jackson has been my guest, and encourage you to catch Carl when he's out. He's playing every... like what you said, middle Mondays.
All the middle Mondays
the
at
middle
the station.
Mondays
the station,
the station, the legendary station.
You know, songwriter things here and there with my buddies Larry Corl and Jerry Sally. And we're going to be down at Gulf Shores next weekend. Not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. We'll be down in Gulf Shores, Alabama for the Frank Brown Songwriters Festival. And, we play here and there.
There's tons of stuff that we could go on several more hours and talk about with your career. Is your music available for sale, like everywhere, like iTunes, Amazon, whatever?
Yeah, there's stuff up there.
They just put your name in and
you'll find stuff. You can get stuff straight off the website too, directly from me. And but please take a listen for this album, Mark Twain Words and Music.
Mark Twain, it's going to help. Keep the Mark Twain stuff going.
Yeah.
All the Mark Twain stuff.
Absolutely.
So we're going to listen to the tracks 11, 12, and 13, and just real briefly set them up, and I'll thank you, and we'll get into it.
Well, you know, the album starts out with when Hallie came to Jackson, because Twain was born with Hallie's Comet in 1835, and he asked God to take him out when it came back. And as Larry Cordell says, you have to be careful what you ask for, because with Halley's Comet in the sky in 1910, Mark Twain passed away. And so I decided I needed a song to kind of wrap up the album kind of told that whole story. And I wrote this song called Comet Ride. And my buddy Ricky Skaggs was kind enough to sing it on the record, and going to let the story before it set it up a little, and then there's a little segment after it that just kind of sums up how people felt about Twain, and it's the last thing you hear on the album also, the two album set telling his life story. And I encourage folks to please listen to it and tell your friends about it.
Carl Jackson, thanks so much for being my guest. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
It's been a joy.
And, thank you, man.
Thank you, Ty.
Sam stayed busy giving speeches, granting interviews, and writing commentary. He accepted honors, accolades, including an honorary doctorate from Oxford University. His daughter Clara married and moved away. Daughter Jean had suffered from epilepsy for years and often lived in sanitariums where doctors searched for a cure. Lonesome for each other, Jean came home to live with her father. Their days together were sweet and made more poignant by their brevity. Jean died of a seizure that Christmas Eve in 1909, just a short time after coming to live with her father. Clemens' grief was profound, and his own days were numbered.
I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It is coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it. It will be the greatest disappointment of my life if I don't go out with Halley's Comet. The Almighty has said, no doubt, now here are these two unaccountable freaks. They came in together. They must go out together.
said November 30, back in 1835. Let the whole world know young Samuel Clemens by the way he will arrive. When the doctor spanks that little bottom and this newborn baby cries, let a light shine bright up here in heaven, leave a trail across the sky. Gonna take a ride on Halley's Comet for the whole wide world to see. Gonna fill the sky, they'll see him coming for a place in history. Them off in old Missouri. Well, the bloody Mississippi was his Harvard and his Yale, and it forever put a stamp upon the way he'd spin the tale. Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, who taught us the fires of hell are better than betraying your best friend. Well, he took a ride on Halley's Comet for the whole wide world to see. A light filled the sky, they saw him coming for a place in history. He dropped him off in old Missouri. Century passed and the year is 1910. Twain lifts a prayer letting me go out just the way that I came in. God smiled down and said, dear Mark, I agree the time is right. I can't bear to see you disappointed. Pick you up on Thursday night. Gonna take a ride on Halley's Comet for the whole wide world to see. Gonna fill the sky, they'll see him going for a place in history. Gonna take a ride on Halley's Comet for the whole wide world to see. Gonna fill the sky, they'll see him going for a place in history. For all eternity.
And so, there ain't nothing more to write about, and I'm rotten glad of it. Because if I'd have knowed what a trouble it was to make a book, I wouldn't have tackled it, and ain't a-gonna do it no more. But I reckon I got a light out for the territory ahead of the rest, because Aunt Sally, she's gonna adopt me and civilize me, and I can't stand it. I've been there before.
Samuel Lennon.